As we begin. God, every day is a gift. And every good and precious and perfect thing is from you, with whom there is no turning. And God, we can be washed about at times, but God, we pray that we would grow in your spirit and rest on your word and on your promises, that we would not be double-minded, that we would hold steadfast to the anchor of our souls. That in you we would find stability and comfort and peace. In you we would find our identities, who you've created us to be, and who you desire us to be in you. Pray that we would grow as a church to be the body that you want us to be, the bride that you intend us to be. That we would be faithful with what you've entrusted to us. That we would grow in your grace and persevere in our faith. We would have the strength and courage to follow you when it's hard, when it's confusing, when our feelings are not what they should be. God, form our hearts that we would have a passion for you, not just a will to do what you want us to do in action, but that our hearts and our minds and with all our strength, we can worship you. Amen. It's application week. So we've gone over so many different sides of discipline, of church discipline, of how the Bible talks about what God does in us and for us, how we interact with each other. So Anna Jane's especially excited about this morning. She helped me put together some hypothetical scenarios that if we are looking at these and thinking about what is church discipline, how ought we to interact with one another? If this is a situation, then what do we do? So that's what we're doing today. So let's jump into it. I've got quite a list here, and I a church greeter has a pattern of not showing up in time to serve. Every time this happens, she's confronted and apologizes, but the pattern continues. What do you do? What does anyone involved? So this might not be what you specifically do, but what should somebody in this situation do? And it's okay to ask questions.
Change churches.
Change churches. The greeter should change churches, or
everybody
else should change churches. You won't have to greet anybody. Problem solved.
Sort of a passive aggressive way of solving.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe she'll get the hint. Dave.
I'm just thinking, in any situation, to begin with, and I'm sure it's done here, as a greeter, as a head greeter, and so forth, there's a, isn't there a form set up and handed to every greeter, should be handed to every greeter?
Okay.
Look over. And on the form, there are suggestions, I guess you might say,
Okay.
To be there on time or ahead of time, and a number of other things, which I can't really remember.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, so there's expectations that if you're going to serve as a greeter, so reviewing them again with her? Okay. So we do know, let me read again, every time that she's late, she's confronted and apologizes. So she knows what the expectations are. Wendy?
Does she realize that this is an important ministry?
That might be something to communicate with her, it might be. She's serving, obviously voluntarily. No one's making anyone serve in the places where they are. She's apologizing. She seems to acknowledge that she knows she's late. But if she's continuing to be late, Delbert, do you have another thought? We don't know.
That's right, and we're jumping to conclusions.
Right, so it's one thing to have a conversation and say, hey, you know, if you're greeting, we want you here on time, but when it keeps happening, I think a really good thing to do is to try to have a different kind of conversation. Is there something that we can help with? Is there something that would be helpful for us to know about? Do you need time to not, and in a welcoming way, do you need time to not serve right now? We're not kicking you off, but, and sometimes it can feel that way. She might really like this, but it might be that this isn't a great time. But trying to have a conversation about how, is there a way that we can support you? Is there something else going on that we don't know about? Maybe there is, maybe there's not. It gets a little harder if there's, if she says there's not something going on, it can get harder, right? Because if she says, no, everything's fine, and she continues to be late, what do you do? Yeah, because greeters need to be there a little earlier. And then maybe, again, having a conversation where maybe we can suggest, you know, we want to have greeters here on time. Is there a different place that you would be willing to serve? Without, again, because she might be saying there's nothing going on and there might still be something going on.
That's right.
Right? So it's important to think about what might the situation be that we don't know. And thinking about the principles of how do we, it's a mistake to jump to like, hey, this is really a problem, we can't have you on the team. Right? Okay. I felt like that was an okay place to start. We're going to go to a different extreme. A pastor has an extramarital affair and is caught by a congregant. It's taken to the elders, and he repents. Okay, and what if this is in our church or another CMA church?
Well, then you involve the district
superintendent. Has to go to the district.
So you have a different standard.
Right.
Right,
and you have a different standard
right.
For pastors and elders. He's caught by a congregant. This is a bigger situation. This is definitely just a bigger situation. And needs to involve the district office in a CMA church. But again, this is whether or not he's a pastor. I think, Joe, you're right that whatever the situation, it's not just like, okay, he repented, everything's done, everything's over. Especially for a spouse, right? It's not like, okay, he repented, you need to forgive him and get over it. It doesn't just go away like that. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and if a congregant finds out about it, if a congregant discovers it, then this is certainly an issue that the church, I'm not going to say certainly, it's very likely an issue that much of the church is going to be aware of. And when it's a pastor, I think there's an appropriateness in people in the church being aware of, and so this gets down to the district office and what they determine is and isn't appropriate. For any church discipline, remember, what we talked about last week is that that there are times when it is appropriate and times when it's not appropriate to share information with other people. But this is going to be hard for the church to deal with. And there always have to be those kinds of considerations. As hard as it is for the church to deal with, it's going to be hard for his wife to deal with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I just think, especially with things like that that end up being public and everybody has an opinion about them and all that stuff, like part of church discipline doesn't just mean like I confront people when I feel wronged or that they confront me when they feel wronged and then I'm subject to discipline. I think it also means that, like in this case, okay, it goes to the district. I am subject to how the district decides to handle it. Like I have to submit to their leadership.
You mean you as a congregant?
Yeah, like yeah. Me as
uh-huh.
Because when these things happen, it just, I think, like in general, everybody has an opinion, and some of us think they're too heavy-handed, and some of us think they're too lenient, and I think part of the umbrella of church discipline is that it's not for us to decide what happens in that situation. I have to submit to what they decide to do with it.
Right. Yeah, when the district makes a decision, I mean, you can be an elder at the church, but when the district makes a decision, that's the decision that was made. You can feel like he repented. Why is he no longer the pastor at our church? You can feel like he needs to go, and the district has whatever their, you know, they make the determination that because of the nature of it or whatever. I don't know what exactly.
He would be done at that church.
At that church.
Not necessarily done in ministry, but mm-hmm.
A congregant comes out publicly as being same-sex attracted. She intends to live a celibate Christian life. A congregant comes out publicly as being same-sex attracted. So you have a woman who comes out and says, I'm attracted to other women. She intends to live a celibate Christian life.
Is that a problem?
Do you think it's a problem?
I don't think it's a problem.
I don't think it's a problem either. Trick question. Yeah. You support her. She admits to being a sinner, to being affected by a fallen world. So am I. Aren't we all? She's probably going to have a unique set of struggles than people who aren't same-sex attracted. There may be people in the church that you have to deal with, to be frank, surrounding this issue, because you support her. She intends to live a Christian life, following Jesus in obedience to what she understands she's commanded to do. And you support her in that. And if she's coming out publicly, you support her publicly.
Would she have to come out publicly?
No, but she chose to. If there's someone who comes to you and says, you know, this is what I'm struggling with, just like with any sin, you don't say, well, we need to make sure that everybody knows about this. So she wouldn't have to, but she chose to. And I think that there's a very unique opportunity to show God's grace and power through that situation. March 25th, Gregory Coles is going to be here. So we were contacted by Dickinson Christian Fellowship. Gregory Coles serves at State College Alliance and has written a book called Single Gay Christian. Is that right? Celibate in the title? Single Gay Celibate Christian? Yeah. And Dickinson Christian Fellowship asked if, since he's coming down here, did we want to help share the cost with them and have him come here? So we're going to have at 5 o'clock, a dinner and a time with him before he goes over later that evening to Dickinson to speak there. But about his, he is a same-sex attracted gay, but celibate Christian serving in an Alliance church. That was a little plug for that. A church member has a habit of reading scandalous romance novels. Her husband has asked her to stop, but she says they are harmless. What do you think he should do? If he came to her and asked her to stop, she won't stop. So if right now he and she are the only ones involved here. Is it hurting their relationship? Presumably, if he wants her to stop and she says, no, they're harmless.
That was my point. There's more involved. If he asks me to stop something that he feels is harmful to me and I say no, there's something fundamentally wrong in our relationship that I wouldn't even take what he's saying for.
Right. And so on one level, there's this kind of silly side to it, right? Because they're scandalous romance novels. On another side, if you switch this around and you have a man who's reading or watching scandalous whatever, she asks him to stop and he says no, or he won't stop. Right? That what's going on in this situation that he wants her to stop And she's just saying, no, they're harmless. It's fine. I would say there's almost certainly more going on than just this. So what do you do? What does he do? Trying to bring probably especially another woman into the situation to say, hey, can you write Matthew 18? There's a conflict. He's bringing somebody else in to say, can you speak into this? Can you try to help in this situation? Trying to take slow steps, but steps. Right, not just saying, well, you know, she said she won't stop. I guess that's just what she's going to do.
I'm struck by the significance of selection of the second person. If he goes to a close friend of hers, she will probably respond differently than if he goes to a close friend of his.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And someone else who's just going to agree with him.
Or if he escalates too quickly and takes it to the church.
Right. Right. Don't like go into your DNA group and be like, hey, why don't we all talk about this? right. But you remember the principle in Matthew 18 that we looked at is how do you take slow, gradual? You don't want to just jump to how big can we make this? But how do we gradually try to add support and speak into this situation? So I think who... he brings him to the situation is important. Pat?
But if he's going to approach it from the standpoint of there is something intrinsically wrong in our marriage, he shouldn't necessarily go to another female, correct?
Right. So right now, the indication that we would have is for him, it seems to be about this issue. If you have a man who feels like he's having issues in his marriage, going to another woman to try to talk about that, yeah, I would agree in principle. It might mean him going to someone that he trusts and can talk to try to have them together, like not him just privately going to another woman. Marianne? Mm-hmm.
And if there is something wrong in the marriage, then he maybe should seek counseling to find that out, what his part in it has been.
Sure.
Because they're one in the eyes of God, so his problem is hers and hers is his. So, but I don't think you should go around, I don't know, I hesitate to say that it would be good for him to go to a friend of hers. I think that's...
I think he needs to bring someone else into it. And it may really depend on who she is and what he believes that what he believes would be helpful for her. Right? He knows her. Is going to one of her friends going to escalate less or is it going to escalate more to her? Would it be better for her if he said, can we go see somebody together, see a counselor, see a pastor or someone together? She might be less threatened by that.
He has made a step that he is authoritatively saying, don't do this. But has he had the opportunity to actually talk to her about how this makes him so that she knows why he's responding the way he is.
I think there can be situations where that's important. I think how he's communicated with her can be important, but at the same time, if part of the situation is that she's reading scandalous romance novels, is this content that is probably not good for her anyway?
But does she understand why he's saying this?
Presumably not, because she's, we could say presumably not. She's saying that she doesn't. She's saying that they're harmless. She may actually understand and just not care. And it takes more to find out. But she is denying that there's any problem with it. There's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. And she's still moving forward. So I think because he has asked her to stop, I think it takes some kind of, whatever that escalation looks like, it takes some kind of step further to say she needs help in understanding that this is not helpful. Whether or not he's tried the right way to communicate with her, he has tried. He may need help, right? They may need help together. He might need help learning how do you communicate effectively if there's something that bothers you. But that doesn't get rid of what she's doing. Okay. Let's move on. A new couple expresses interest in church membership. They left their previous church due to an unresolved matter of church discipline.
They left for what reason?
An unresolved matter of church discipline.
Did it involve them?
How did the receiving church know
about that? It's possible that they're open about it. Mm-hmm. Or that, let's say it involved them. Mm-hmm.
So they were subject to the disciplinary process.
Yep.
Okay. I passed out when I was a pastor.
I mean, I don't know.
Child abuser in the previous church, do we take them at face value then?
But how do you know they are?
We know.
It's just not different.
In a small town, right, people are going to know. So for whatever reason, we know.
Probably three scenarios under which we know. Four. I think that as Christian brothers and sisters, we have a responsibility for reconciliation, but what does that look like? That's really the question.
Right, right. Wouldn't that be at the hands of the elders or
leadership? Right. Push it off. All right, all the elders and pastors in the room, this is on you.
Without
without consulting with any of the elders or the pastors?
I think that there would definitely be wisdom in that.
Or the pastor and the elders could appoint a couple to reach out.
Yeah, it's one thing to say, I want to make sure that we involve the elders so that they can deal with this. But it's another thing to say, I'm in over my head. I don't know what to do about this, and I need to seek godly wisdom in what are we supposed to do about this?
The practical aspect of this is that couple comes into a church and says, we volunteer to teach children's church. Fewer questions will be asked.
Well, but you still have to go through your process of
right.
Sure.
I promise not to take long. Can we put some words to the tension in this room right now?
Yeah.
Because it's keen. I mean, I've been here for half of the semester. I've been bouncing back and forth between two classes. These are real life scenarios. This is not fiction.
Yeah.
And I'm just sensing how we're responding. I'm responding the same way. Wow. If Anna Jane's responsible for this.
Oh.
I'd love to hear how you're responding in your spirit right now to these issues that are being put before you.
Yeah, and it is tense, and it is, this is part of what I was saying last week. It's important for us to, in an open way, and in as tense as this is and as hard as this is about as least threatening as these serious of situations can get. Where it's hypothetical, happened somewhere else, and where even though we have emotions involved in this and where we're thinking about so many situations that we've known of, we can talk about this situation as this situation and as not being any of us. And when we can talk about that and sort through some of it here, where we can disagree, where we can work through, I'm not sure I understand or agree. That we're building up strength, and we're building up unity together by being able to talk about this. Rose first, and then.
I have a question.
Yes.
If the problem is not resolved
mm-hmm.
in the church that we're leaving, don't we carry that through to the next church?
If there's an unresolved problem. Mm-hmm. There is something coming along with an unresolved problem. Wendy, and then I saw something over here. You're coming right upon, I think, a really, really important question that we haven't asked yet.
Go ahead, ask
it. How many times do we forget?
Anna Jane, what's the question?
I don't know where you're going.
Oh. What is the unresolved issue of church discipline? Because we're talking about church discipline because we want to make sure that as a church, we do this well. Do churches do church discipline well? When you hear about churches doing church discipline, you either hear about the fact that, I've never heard of anyone being disciplined in our church, or you have group of elders that's been there for 40 years, and they, no one can touch them, and they dropped the hammer on somebody, and all they did was, I don't know, look the wrong direction in the grocery store or something. What is the situation? There's an unresolved issue of church discipline. Let me tell you where this scenario came from. So I know a pastor. They had a woman come to their church who was under church discipline from her previous church because her husband was abusive and she left. She should not leave her husband. And so that pastor went to the previous church and said, she's a member of our church, you leave her alone. She fled an abuser, and they disciplined her for it. Not him. They disciplined her. Right. So what is the situation? Why is there an unresolved matter of church discipline? That's a really important question. It's a reason that when we welcome new members in, we do want to be supportive. We do want to help in reconciliation. We do want to know where is this person and how can we help them? How can we serve them? How can we have a relationship with this person? They are coming in with, right, as sinners. And we don't discipline them for being sinners, but we also, I think, it is our responsibility as pastors and elders to know if someone seeks membership at our church, is this someone that should be a member of our church? Because possibly they were under church discipline for something very legitimate, and they decided to run away rather than deal with it. And now they want to come here. And if you are refusing to submit to authority there, and you would rather just run away than deal with it, then I as an elder, I have to think that it is not going to be any different here. Even if what that issue was, right, we might say, well, I don't know if we would quite take it to that point. Like, there's at least a conversation that I think needs to happen. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because obviously if you're under a disciplinary process, that's one thing. If you're leaving because you don't think the church did something right or appropriate or mm-hmm. at your standard, that's entirely different.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And again, it's important to keep in mind that churches, on the whole, right, don't do church discipline well. Just because there's an unresolved matter of church discipline, you have to be really careful about what you assume or think or how you assess the situation without really knowing what the situation is. I'm humming to try to relieve tension. Mostly my own. If it helps yours, then that's great. But
so the previous situation that you gave with the couple that had, right?
Yep.
Church that he had been a part of knew he wasn't there and sought out where was he going because they were certain he was going to church. And so they found out he was at our church same time, it was, because immediately the elders were, we all gathered that night when we first found out, right? We all stopped everything, got together and said, all right, what do we do? Because our responsibility was, we felt, first and foremost, protect the flock. But second, also, how do we shepherd him? Right? God led him to our door for a reason. And in the midst of his sin, and he was very forthright when I met with him, this is what he was doing. He had been doing this. It had been called off. He had stopped. He had become repentant. But at the same time, I told him, look, you know, forgiveness is between you and Christ, right? And her. We have to show grace and mercy, but at the same time, right, forgiveness is different than trust. And they don't always go hand in hand. Forgiveness can be done in an instant, but trust is going to take years to rebuild oftentimes.
That's right.
Right? And so I told him, here's the deal. We're going to allow you to come here, but there are three men. The moment you come to that door, you must find. And you can't enter the doors until you find one of those three men. And one of us will be standing outside waiting for you. And if we're not, you need to call us to get one of them out there. Because we don't want you in the building without someone next to you who's going to protect the young women of this church. Right? That was really hard for him to hear. But I think it was really important for him to understand that, look, you've put yourself in a place in which people do not trust you. This is the result of your sin. And I think it's so important oftentimes for us to understand the implication of the sin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just like the woman with the books, right? But he would have not had a problem with it, most likely, unless there was a problem that it was causing in the marriage. There were things happening that was a problem, right? It was either false expectations or romance. Who knows, right? But there are implications that are occurring, and those implications need to be understood and brought out. He understood it. Now, he didn't last long, to be honest, because I don't believe he was arrested, and he served about 4 years because he met with her again. They went across state lines, right, to try and get married. So his repentance was not true.
Right.
But you don't know that, and as a result, because we can't gauge the heart, the elders have a responsibility to the flock, to protect the flock, because our church was closely tied to the other church. So the members of our church knew one another very well. It was a sister church of ours. And so our membership found out rather quickly about his deeds at the other church. And so we needed to let the flock know that the elders are taking appropriate responsibility to protect the young women in this church, right? Your daughters are being protected. He's here, yes, but not except under supervision so that you're safe, because your safety is primary. Because we don't know.
Yep.
Is he a sheep? Is he a wolf?
So let me, I read this last week. This is in the preamble of the Uniform Policy and Discipline. I won't bore us all again and go through, although maybe at this point we would prefer that. The goals of discipline are to honor God, to protect the purity of the church, to guard other Christians from being tempted, misled, divided, or otherwise harmed, and to bring fallen Christians to repentance. It's for that person who's being disciplined. It is for their good. And it is also for everybody else. It's important to keep that in mind too. When we have feelings about is this really how we should be dealing with this? What's going on in everybody else? In all the other people in this situation? All the other people in this situation? Because if you're the parent, you might look at that guy and be like, yeah, he repented. Right, and we've heard the whole story, so it's a little easier for us to feel a pretty plain way about it. But he came to your church, he was repentant, what about the people who have a teenage daughter? How are they going to feel about this? And you have to protect them. So, yeah. Thank you. Okay. A longtime church member has been given many opportunities to serve in the church, but has never been willing. A longtime church member has been given many opportunities to serve in the church, but has never been willing. Talk to me more about that. Church work days. I mean, because there's. Let's say they've been asked a number of different things. They've been asked to be a greeter. They've been asked to serve on a finance team. I'm trying to cover different bases for why they might. You know, they've been asked to serve with kids. They've been asked to be an usher. They've been asked to, see, we said kids, but you could have nursery in there. They're kids too, I guess. Babies are kids. They've been asked to come to work days. They've been asked to serve, to help prepare food for, you know, a social, or to take a meal to someone who needed a meal. Never been willing. Yep.
Long-time member.
And we, when we say long-time member, let's put a number on it. Let's say 20 plus years.
Well, it's a little late to be disciplining them now. I think should have been disciplining them when they're 5 years. Or asking them why they're not willing to do something. There may be a reason, but waiting 20 years, forget it. That's the way I feel about it. I really do. I think you've waited too long.
So if you wait too long to discipline, then you shouldn't discipline.
In this case. Absolutely. Because that does not really hurt, I don't think, anyone except that person. That person is the one who loses out, misses out in this. By them not serving us, we don't miss out so much. They miss out on the blessing of serving, because serving is a blessing. And I think we need to figure out why in the world at 5 years, at 2 years,
but if it's not hurting anyone but them, why would you say that you should do it earlier on?
What I'm saying, Daniel, is at the point of 20 years, you have waited way too long to investigate and figure out what this person needs. At this point, they're, I don't know what age, let's say they're 38.
Okay.
Spirit.
you know, and you know, maybe they never open enough to realize that, no, it's not all about me, you know, it's about the body, you know, it's about the family here, and I can do something, you know, maybe that person has a very low self-esteem, but then others can come alongside of that person and help that person.
Wendy? I am guessing that if they have been unwilling to serve in any way over a number of years, that prayer is a powerful and very important part of what we do as a church, and it is important that we all be praying. But if we are not practically serving each other, if we are saying to somebody, be warm and be filled and be at peace, but we're not feeding them and clothing them, there are tangible needs, and I believe that there's something that this person could do.
Is she tied?
Is it sufficient to just give money to a church? Is it enough to go to a church and say, I give lots of money to the church, but I really don't care to have relationships?
What is enough?
Yes. What is enough?
How do you determine what is enough?
Isn't it reasonable that we want people to have relationships with each other? That if there's someone who very likely is feeling something inside of their spirit, that they've been unwilling to do any kind of service, to serve alongside other people for that long of a period of time, there's something going on. And if church discipline, remember, is not about how can we get this person into trouble, but how can we help this person and encourage this person? This person needs to know that there is joy and fellowship in service and being involved. And are we encouraging and edifying and exhorting? Are we calling them alongside us if we say, well, maybe we waited too long, or maybe there's something else that they're doing that nobody knows about, and they just are content to not have relationships with people and to serve alongside people in ways that they would be capable of.
I think this question that has been raised needs more descriptors.
Okay. Right, but if you have a long-time member who's been paraplegic for 3 years, but then you have a different situation, right? You don't expect someone who's paraplegic to come out to the church and, you know, run the soundboard. But if you have someone who's, there are so many things that a paraplegic person can do. We are short-sighted if we think that someone being paraplegic has no way of serving in the church. If we think that someone who's shy has no way of serving in the church, if we think that someone who has a job where they make a lot of money and gives a lot of money to the church, if they have fellowship with the church because they give money and because they're there on Sunday, I have a stronger desire for our church than just that we show up and give money. Mm-hmm.
And build relationship.
Yeah.
Not just, this isn't a punishment situation. This is a, let me learn who you are. Let me understand why I've been sitting beside you for 20 years and I don't understand.
Yeah.
So this may be a long process in introducing them to the value of serving and being part of a church more than perhaps just giving, perhaps just attending.
Right. How do we know how to deal with it if nobody has ever had that conversation with them?
Yes.
And will our church ever grow? Because remember, church discipline isn't, it is about this person and how do we help this person, but it's not just about this person. Because if you have a church where we say, well, it's just easier not to have a conversation with this person, then what you have is a church where it can be 20 years where somebody comes in, sits down, and never serves, and no one will talk to them about it. And I don't want that kind of church. Right? I want a church where if somebody is not serving, not involved, where it's not like, hey, come on, this isn't enough. You got to do more and more and more, right? That's not what I want. But where we have fellowship with each other, where we have a conversation with each other, and say, like, how can you serve? Like, is there something I can do? Can we serve together? Inviting somebody in to serve. Church discipline is about the fellowship that we have with each other, the relationships that we have with each other and with our God. And we should not let each other go for 20 years. We should not let each other go any longer than, oh, I mean, you can't put a time on this, right? But God, I love this church. But I know that I don't love this church as much as you do. I know that I don't love this church as well as you do. God, I know that we all have so much room to grow. I know that there are things that you have been doing in me and that you are doing in me, some of which I'm very aware of and some of which I'm not. And God, I believe it's the same thing for this church, that there are so many things going on in individuals here and in who we are as a body. And you are growing us and stretching us. And sometimes we feel the pain of knowing what that is, and sometimes it's just discomfort and we don't know God. But I pray that we would exhort each other. We would stand by, stand alongside, and call each other alongside of you and what you're doing. God, that we have a bond together in faith that is rooted in and established on who you are and your promises to us. And you will produce in us the faithful fruit of righteousness. I thank you for the time that we've had this quarter to study this. And God, I pray that these conversations would continue among us, that we can grow, that we can encourage each other. God, this is really what this is about. I don't want us to wait to encourage each other. Pray for your grace on each one of us. Amen.